Welcome to another episode of Making Magic with your host, Bradley Morris from Magic Media. This is the go-to show for purpose-driven creators to get inspired with innovative new ideas to produce your educational content, build thriving online communities, and turn your message into a movement. All right, dearly beloved, are you ready to learn some fun stuff? Because today I have Danny Eney, who is the founder of Miracy and a leading voice in the world of online courses. Now, Danny and I have known each other for quite a few years since we created and launched the Great eCourse Adventure. It was around the same time that we found out about each other. We've had a lot of conversations. Danny's been on my podcast quite a few times over the years, and he is probably the one and only other person aside from myself that I'm going to tell you to go work with if you're going to be building online courses. His insights and methodologies have graced the pages of Harvard Business Review, Entrepreneur Inc., Forbes, and Business Insider. So Danny's a sought-after speaker, and he's worked with Yale University, Google, and he's written a lot of books, including Teacher Gift, Effortless, and Guide on the Side, Winning the Courses in the Age of AI. So today I want to dig into a bunch of relevant topics. I know all of you out there are building trainings, you're building programs, you're building courses. We're going to dig into how the industry is evolving and what Danny's learning from the thousands of people he has had the pleasure of working with over the last couple years since he was last on the show. So Danny, thank you so much for taking some time for being here with us today. I really appreciate you.
Brad, it's a pleasure and a privilege, and thank you for the very gracious introduction.
Man, this is, you know, we've been both going our paths around online courses and trainings. We, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever it is, with the Great eCourse Adventure, you know, we did this 9-month production where we, you know, we had, it was like Indiana Jones meets Saturday Night Live, where we're mixing comedy with education and teaching entrepreneurs how to build transformational courses. It was 9 months of production. It was an insane beast. We gamified the heck out of it, and it was great. And now I've completely flipped in the opposite direction, where the majority of our trainings are live. They're like part teaching, part get shit done work parties. And I'm finding that low production quality with like high live presence and coaching is far more effective at helping people to actually get the results than these like 9-month production stints where we just put our hearts and souls into making art. And I'm just curious for yourself, like, what are you seeing in the work that you're doing is like really working in the online course space?
You know, it's an interesting kind of dichotomy, but it's not an either or.
Yeah.
Like, so fundamentally, if we start with how do people learn, right? How do human beings develop skills? And the skill part is important because people don't want to pay significant amounts of money for a course that will teach them about something, right? They want to pay significant amounts of money for courses that will teach them to do something. In other words, there is an outcome that they want. They need a skill in order to create that outcome. And the course is a shortcut, right? Developing that skill in less time, at less cost, with less risk of failure. So how do we develop skills? Well, there are three steps. The first is you consume information, right? You actually learn, in air quotes, something new. And that can be watching the video, listening to the audio, reading the text. And that's where the, you know, the entertaining videos, the high production value, et cetera, it has value in that it keeps people coming back. It holds their attention. So that's great in the sense that, like, is it better than not having that? Sure. The question is, does that lead to transformation? The answer is no, because consuming the information is only the first step, right? If that was all it took, then, you know, that first scene in the beginning of The Karate Kid where Daniel LaRusso is trying to learn karate from a book, that would have worked and we wouldn't have needed the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But that obviously doesn't work. We don't get good at things just by consuming information about it. The next thing we need to do is apply. And we can do that application in a very practical way, like doing actual things in our businesses and our lives, or it can be theoretical, right? Exercises, worksheets, et cetera. And then the third step is we need to get feedback about this is what you did right, this is what you didn't do right, this is what you need to change, and so forth. And the good news is that there's always feedback. The bad news is that often it is unnuanced, unhelpful, and unpleasant, right? So if I decide that I want to learn skateboarding, I can just go out there and I'll get feedback, but it's going to be from the concrete and gravity. And it's not going to make a special effort to make the lessons clear for me, right? I have to
skateboard
like
I do then.
There you go.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the challenge, right? You need that feedback. And where a course can really go a long way is, I mean, yeah, be entertaining, be engaging. That's kind of like table stakes. But then create the opportunity for people to apply what they're learning and for them to get feedback on, this is what was good, this is what needs to be improved. Now, it's not an either or in the sense that, I mean, yeah, is low production value with opportunities to apply and get feedback better than high production value, engaging, entertaining with none of those things? Yes, but ideally it'll be, I mean, the production value is incidental. That depends on whether it's like a core piece of your brand and identity and so forth, but it should be entertaining. It should be engaging, but the real transformation happens when they apply and when they get feedback.
That's right. Yeah. They need to put it to work. And so with the work that you've been doing, what have some of the biggest, have there been any like monumental shifts in the industry in either how people are consuming or how they're buying or purchasing or pricing? Like, what are you noticing as some of the biggest changes in this industry that we're in around online education, online coaching programs?
Well, I mean, the major thing that crashed into our industry like a like an asteroid a little more than a year and a half ago was AI.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was the cataclysmic event. And it was cataclysmic. It's funny, like the first time I saw someone like talking about AI, I kind of dismissed it. I tend to not jump onto the new fads. You know, I'm not on the latest social platforms. I've never had a TikTok account. Like I'm not that guy. So I was like, okay, this is another one of those things. It's going to come, it's going to go. And then I attended a presentation where someone was showing, look at all the cool things I'm doing with AI. And honestly, I was horrified. He was basically showing, look at how I'm using AI to spam all these people in all these different ways. I was like, this is terrible. And what I realized is that yes, AI is a very powerful tool, and you can use it to do a lot. But the biggest impact on our industry, and this totally ended up playing out the way I saw it coming, the biggest impact is from people who are using it the way they shouldn't.
Yeah.
So how should you use AI? Well, really simple rule of thumb. This is what I teach all my students. Pretend AI is an infinitely hardworking, never gets tired, but only moderately competent assistant. So if you've got that infinitely hardworking, and never gets tired, but only moderately competent assistant, how would you work with that person? And you know, that's not so hard to get your head around. You're like, okay, well, I'd give them really clear instructions, right? Also known as prompt engineering. And I would always check their work. So in other words, never ask AI to do something that you aren't capable of and qualified to do, right? Another good analogy is that AI to knowledge workers is like power tools to a carpenter, right? That power tools don't really empower you to do things you couldn't have done without it. It just saves you a lot of time and energy. And by the way, you can also do a lot more damage. So you've got to be careful.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? It's amazing how great it is. I use it for an editing tool. So for example, with this podcast episode, we're recording the video. I'll then take the transcript. I'll run the transcript through Descript. I'll put that transcript into ChatGPT and ask it to turn this into the article version of this. But if I don't give it the clear prompts around keeping our voice and the conversation flow the same, it will rewrite this whole conversation. It'll sound completely different than Danny and Bradley speaking together. It will sound like a robot version of this that is completely different than our unique voices. And that's something I found really annoying. And it's just, again, like the prompt engineering, you have to be so clear and specific with what you're asking it to do for you.
Well, and there, I mean, this is a bit of a tangent, but we're all kind of working against a handicap of muscle memory when it comes to getting good with using AI, because we've all had 20 years of practice using Google, where basically it's like, how do I get the result I want with the fewest words possible? Right? So it's like, what are the three or five keywords that will return what I think I want? And with AI, it's the other way around. It's not here's a few. It's like you've got to give it the instructions, the details, like you're talking to a real person.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's how you should use AI. And if you do it that way, it can save you a lot of time, create leverage. You know, it's great.
What are some of the ways that you're regularly using AI, like this example I just gave, within your business? How are you currently using it?
Yeah, so a whole bunch of ways. So to record and summarize meetings, right? Yeah. So a meeting is done, you get a detailed, like, this is what was discussed, this is what was agreed upon. You know, it's fantastic for that. I use it for images for my presentations a lot, rather than going on the stock photo sites and searching for, you know, I need something that looks like this. And it's like, I just tell ChatGPT, I want an image. I specify, I want it widescreen, 1920 by 1080. I want it to show this and this and that. And sometimes it's terrible, but often it's good and I can use it and it saves me a bunch of time and money.
Yeah.
I use it as a brainstorming partner. I use it to kind of double check, am I missing anything obvious?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like working through a problem. I feel like I've looked at it from all the angles. I'm like, ChatGPT, pretend you are a master strategist. You have expertise in this and that. I give it all the parameters, the role definition, et cetera. What are the different things you would look at? And it gives me the list. It's like, oh, wait, I forgot number four. So I should consider that one.
That's so great.
It's great for example. A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I honestly, like sometimes if like I'm just dragging, I use it as a coach.
Yeah.
Right. I'll tell it, you know, act as a master life coach. I'm feeling kind of tired, unmotivated, et cetera. How would you coach me? Now, I'm never asking it for anything where I can't read it and be like, that's bad advice.
Yeah.
Don't have the expertise to do that. I'm not going to ask the question.
Yeah. And
so the courses industry is not changing all that much because of people using it the right way. We're just, you know, getting more courses to market faster and they're richer. Yeah, that's great. The problem is the people who are using AI to create courses by asking it to do things that they are not capable of doing, not qualified to do, can't evaluate the quality. And what that creates is a flood of very mediocre, dubious, low quality content courses that are like information only, the kind of stuff you'd see. It's only text, it's, you know, video with AI narration, it's that sort of thing. And they're sold for cheap because the cost of production is cheap. It's kind of like a numbers game kind of play. Nobody's trying to build a brand and earn credibility. They're just like, let's flood the zone with this stuff and hope it gets bought.
Yeah.
And that has created a massive erosion of trust. And it also created a lot of downward pressure on the value of information only courses. And that's a trend that's been happening for a while.
Yeah.
It's really accelerated.
Yeah. So no doubt.
It's really caused consumers to double down on the fact that they're not going to pay very much money at all for information about something. What they're looking for is how to do something and the infrastructure in the course, you know, the coaching, the training, the support, the whatever, that will help them actually get good enough at it to get their results. And so that they'll pay for.
So a question that I have that kind of leads into what you were just talking about is, in your opinion, this day and age, with all of that to be said, how do creators and coaches that are in this space, how do they earn trust, in your opinion?
And part of it is the what we've always done, right? The drip, drip, drip of showing up, offering value, creating good stuff. And the bar is higher. You know, you publish stuff and people have this question. Sometimes they ask it in so many words, sometimes just in the back of their mind, but they're like, did ChatGPT write this?
Yeah.
Right. And they're not asking it with a tone of like playful curiosity. Oh, I wonder. No, it's like, the subtext, should I dismiss this? Do I actually need to read it? Is it legit or is it, in air quotes, real?
Yeah.
And we can debate philosophically what that means, but like, if they're looking, they're like, do I even need to read this? That's not a good thing for the person hitting publish.
Absolutely.
So you've got to that much more infuse what you're doing with personality, make the media that much richer, right? Hiding behind the written word is, you can do some stuff in writing, but people need to see you. They need to hear you. And then when it comes to what you're offering in program design, guaranteeing outcomes is really important and powerful. Pointing to the experiential elements of what you're delivering becomes that much more important, because that means there's a real there. That means that you stand behind the promises that you make.
Beautiful. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. It's such a interesting time. It's such a creative time to be in the world that we're in right now, where the tools for making magic on the internet are so much more accessible and easier to learn. I mean, I'm sure you look back on your career and where we were at when you got started, where we were at when I got started so long ago, of like even just building a WordPress site without the drag and drop builders, or trying to edit videos without, you know, without our cell phones and something like a program like CapCut to just like whip it together so fast and add B-roll. And it's just like, it's absolutely amazing. So where would you say, you know, for people that are, they're early stage, or they're like in it, but they're not seeing the results, where would you encourage people to put their focus to start to see some gains in the space?
Make something people want.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
It's always that, right? It's not about, I'm to your point about, you know, something that's immersive versus high production value, et cetera. The accoutrements are all relevant later.
Yeah.
Right. All things being equal, will a higher production value, more entertaining course do better than one that isn't? Yeah, of course. But all things are rarely equal. And that's the key thing. The key thing that really matters is, are you creating something that people really want? Are you promising an outcome that is important to them? Right? Marketing and business are highly democratic, and that you don't get to decide for anyone what they want. You can only cater to what they do, in fact, want. So what is the outcome that people care about? How can you deliver it most seamlessly, most thoroughly? How can you get them there? What's it going to take? Really being thoughtful and creative about what they want, abstracting your expertise and your processes to kind of see underlying, what do I really need to teach them to get them there? And then how can I engineer an experience that's going to be really rich and powerful and create the outcome quickly, right? Fundamentally, again, what people are buying is a shortcut, getting the outcome they want in less time, at less cost, and with less risk of failure. So how can you over-index on those three dimensions?
Yeah. And as far as tools that you're using, tools that your team's using, you know, I know a lot of the people that we work with, they come in and they're just like, they're overwhelmed by there's too many tech choices. They don't know what to use, what's going to help leverage their time and energy and creativity. What are some of your favorite tools that you're using right now?
I mean, honestly, again, I don't jump on the latest thing. I mean, we've got the tools, we're using them, but to launch your course, what do you really need? You need a pen, you need paper, you need like Word or PowerPoint or something. But you should have the expertise to be able to stand up and teach in an effective way about whatever you're teaching about. If you don't have that skill, you shouldn't be creating an online course on that topic, right? You're not there. You're not ready. So everything, I mean, you know, I tell people your first course, sign people up, deliver it live on Zoom, or if you want, I mean, use Zoom or something else to just record yourself and send them the files. But don't invest in anything complex until people have paid you money and been happy with what you've given them, without all the bells and whistles.
Yeah. Yeah. We went backwards on that one with all of our programs and course. I mean, I'd validated my idea for years before we built the Great eCourse Adventure, but it was, you know, it was a beast. And was it worth the effort? Yes. In the sense that it was the first time in my entrepreneurial journey where I felt like my inner artist and my inner entrepreneur and coach were like, it was married, and that set me off on a completely different trajectory in my life. But the advice that I would give creators earlier on in their career is exactly what you're saying, is like, deliver it live for the first bunch of times and do that as much as you possibly can. And then from each time you deliver it live, you can find ways to improve it and ways to make it a better and better an experience. And that might be where you get more creative and think outside of the box and add some extra content that is pre-recorded, that is higher production value, or add some really beautiful guided audio meditations that might go with the experience as well. But I agree. It's most important to be live with people when you're first starting out as often as possible. The more often, the quicker you're going to improve and go through that evolutionary arc in your teaching journey.
And it's not just about time to market either. I mean, it's also about, like, if I'm delivering a training to 20 people on Zoom, I can see their faces.
Yeah.
Like, I know right away if they're confused. I don't have to wait for 3 weeks after I sent the thing and they didn't submit their assignments or their mistakes in them. Like, I'm trying to intuit, well, wait, what went wrong? Right. Like, just being able to see the look on their face, like, huh? Like, you get it right away. That's priceless. And you're not going to need it later, but with your first versions, it's critical.
Yeah. Yeah. And what are your current recommendations for folks around marketing and getting eyeballs on their stuff?
So you want to start close and then work your way out to the broader circle. So everyone has this fantasy of, I'm going to create an online course and I'm going to build a magical marketing machine, which is kind of a black box. They don't really have a clear sense of how it's going to work, but it's going to do its thing and make strangers on the internet somehow find them and like them and buy them. And that's all good, right? Eventually you can get there. That can happen. You know, there are lots of ways to do it. You can work with joint venture partners. You can run ads. There's SEO, like there's all the channels, and which one fits depends on your situation. But the challenge with all of those is that selling something to a stranger is hard, right? There's a hurdle of establishing credibility. There's a hurdle of earning trust. There's a lot of hurdles you have to overcome. And that's fine. You can do it. I mean, obviously people do it every day, but it's especially hard if you're doing it with the handicap of, you know, when you say, I've got this course, do you want to sign up? The two first questions that are automatically going to go to someone's mind are, well, who else has gone through this course and what have their results been? And if your course is so new, which most people who are stuck, that's where they are, that your answer is going to be, well, nobody's gone through this course before. I don't have any significant results or case studies to point to. And that's not a criticism of someone's expertise or experience. It's, you know, when something is new, that's how it is. When I launch a new course, that's how it is. So that's an extra handicap. That makes selling it to strangers really hard. And so until you get to the point where you've got those case studies, you've got that proof, you want to go to people that already trust you and like you to some degree, right? And so that can be, usually if you're going to sell into a market, it's because you know enough about the market to be able to help them. And if you know enough about the market to be able to help them, then presumably you're connected to people in that market. Start with the basic blocking and tackling of reaching out to your network, speaking at local conferences, going to groups and events that are going to be receptive and so forth. And you know, the way to sell 100,000 copies of something is start with one and then get the second, then get the third. And once you've got that proof, that momentum, you've gotten a little better at delivering the presentation so people are like, they get it and they want to buy it. Mm-hmm. That's when you start looking more broadly. But the reason the broader marketing tends not to work for people is that they jump to it too soon and they're just playing with too many handicaps.
Yeah. And you know, one of the biggest hurdle for any entrepreneur at the early stages is getting over that fear of putting yourself out there, that and feeling like you're not ready. And you know, you essentially, there comes a time when you have your offer and it's time to just get in front of people and start offering it and put the invitation out there for people to step in with you.
It's like jumping into a cold swimming pool. Right, like
it.
You've got to get in there. If you drag it out and torture yourself for like 3 months, you can do that. But you know, it's going to be the same once you're in there. You might as well just hold your nose and jump in.
Yeah, as a cold water addict, you know, I've been going in cold water for 20 years, and you have to trick your mind and just not think about it. Just throw your body over the edge, and then you're in. That's the only way I can do it. Another question: What has you most excited in your life's work? You know, you're in a mature phase of growing your business. What keeps you really stoked and focused and excited in your work right now?
Well, I mean, mature is relative, right? Because I mean, yes, on the one hand, you know, I have 100 people working for me. We do, I don't know, $13, $15 million in revenue a year. So yeah, I didn't start my business yesterday. I'm, you know, by internet terms, I'm a dinosaur. But with that being said, business tends to go in cycles, right? Where, you know, you have an instinct, you have a sense that there's an opportunity for something and you're like trying to figure it out. And eventually it crystallizes into an epiphany and you start implementing it and there's expansion, everything is working. But that's not where it ends, right? From there, you start going into stagnation, which has to happen because the world doesn't stand still. Markets evolve, competitors see what you're doing and catch up, things change, et cetera. And if you're not paying attention, you start to stagnate. And then you get to a crisis where, you know, you go from the going bankrupt gradually to doing it suddenly, right? In the Hemingway terms. And that brings you back to that, like, well, what am I going to do? How am I going to make things work? Or you can be proactive in looking at like, well, what's the next thing that I'm exploring, that I'm figuring out? And you do that when you're still in that place of expansion. So the only way to really keep on growing is to look for what is the thing where it's not mature, and it's not like, I mean, yeah, you know, cultivate the core business and support your people. But the way to keep on growing and staying ahead is to keep looking for where is there an opportunity to innovate? Where is there an opportunity to do something that you haven't done before, that maybe nobody's done before? You know, we were talking before we started recording, we just released a movie. Like, we spent the last 3 years making a movie. And I mean, we'd never done that before. It's not something we had to do, but it felt like this could be a cool new thing to figure out. And the way I tend to go into this, I'm like, okay, conceptually, do I think we could do it? Yes. And then, you know, I add on the, you know, the typical entrepreneurial suffix of like, how hard can it be? Which is always famous last words. It always turns out to be a lot harder than you thought, but you explore and figure out something new. And that's, you know, there's always more, and it's always new. When you start just, you know, tending the gardens that you planted ages ago, you're stagnating and going to decline. I'm not there.
Beautiful. That's a great answer. And let's just pretend you woke up tomorrow and you didn't have 100 employees. You didn't have a following. You didn't have a bank account. You were starting from scratch, but you had all of the knowledge and the wisdom that you have right now. If you had to start over tomorrow, where would you put your focus in those, say, first 6 months to grow your business to become successful?
Individual sales. I would not be focusing on creating content. I would not be focusing on website. I would not be focusing on anything. I would be looking to meet as many people in person as possible, shake their hands, get on the phone, sit down at coffee, get to know their business. So I see where there's an opportunity for me to help and get some business going.
Amazing.
Because you can't do anything else without the runway that allows you to know you're building something without a gun to your head.
Yeah. Yeah. I say this all the time, because everybody who comes into, you know, my sphere is like, I want to build my online business. I want to be working online. And I'm just like, well, what are you doing locally? How I got started in this is I taught 500 meditation workshops locally in the city that I was in at the time. And that's how I got into online, is I created the demand by creating such an orbit around what I was doing in my local community by showing up and teaching this community for 3 years, 500 times. Mm-hmm. And so many people forget about the importance of having something happening in their local area that they can, especially in the early days. It's so important to be getting that in-person, real-time feedback and conversation with other people that you can be helping. And it's so satisfying.
Yeah. And look, fundamentally, you know, as much as we talk about AI and digital presence, like, we're mammals, right? We are physical beings that are wired around in-person connection. So connection and contact are accelerants of trust.
Yeah.
So can you do all this online? Sure. But it'll take longer if you're doing it all online. And if you start in person, things move faster, and you leverage that to bring that proof and accelerate online. It's all the better.
Yeah. So coming to the end of the time here with you, this felt like a rapid fire. I've got like 10 questions that are going to be in the show notes here. Where can people watch the movie? Where's that going to be available? Because I'm sure people are going to be curious about that.
Yeah. So we're only doing screenings for a very limited time. And then we're going to look at, like, you know, opening it to the public later in the year. But for people who are listening to this kind of like right as it comes out, if you go to teachyourgift.movie, then you can register for a screening. And if you've passed the window, you'll see there the information. There'll be a waiting list so that you can watch it as soon as it becomes available. But teachyourgift.movie. And then barring that, I mean, Mirase, my website, mirase.com, or just look me up on Amazon, and there's a lot.
And is there anything exciting coming up for you aside from that you want to talk about right now?
I mean, the movie's a pretty big deal for me. So that's
congratulations. That is a big deal.
Yeah.
A 3-year project. You must be very satisfied that you're like at the finish line.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm so close to it that, like, I've lost all ability to objectively say whether it's good or not. But what I know is that other people have told me they liked it. And for me, I had to watch it like 12 times in the process of making it. And even the last time, I didn't want to put a fork in my eye. So that tells me that it's pretty good.
I know the feeling with all the audio stories we do at Magic Kids. It's like I listen to each and every one of them so many times before they go to market. And yeah, that's beautiful. I appreciate the work you're doing, you know, the ripples you're putting out to the world through all of the people who have influence and are making a difference in the world. Like those are some big waves that you're sending out there. So congratulations and thank you for that, for making the world better.
Thank you, my friend.
And good luck with the movie launching. I'm looking forward to watching it.
You're here. I hope you love it.
I will. Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Making Magic Podcast with your host, Bradley T. Morse from Magic Media. If you're inspired to leverage your life's work by crafting your transformational, educational, and inspirational media, thriving online community, profitable membership, or to turn your message into a movement, then head on over to magicmedia.com, that's M-A-J-I-K, media.com, and explore what our partnership opportunities have to offer you and your beautiful business.